Hi, this is Colin McCallan. Thank you for listening. Please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you.
Welcome to Is This Legal? Here are your hosts, attorneys Colin McCallan and Russell Hebbets.
Hello to all of our listeners. Welcome back to the Is This Legal podcast. We got another fun doozy for you today. My name is Colin McCallan. As always, I am accompanied by my partner in crime, Russell Hebbets. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hope everybody is getting through the week okay and enjoying your September. We are going to revisit a case that we did a couple of podcasts on last year, Russ, Alex Murdaugh. I'm sure that name is very familiar to all of our listeners. He, of course, is the former attorney, former South Carolina prominent attorney who was convicted for murdering his son and his wife in a very high-profile, long, elaborate trial that took place last year. He was convicted. He has been sentenced to, I think, a couple of life sentences. Right. We covered those cases, Russ, in episodes 90 and 91. Well, we thought that we had the bookend of this case completed, but it turns out that we might be headed back to court in a pretty big way, Russ. What is going on?
So there have been, there was just a new filing by his defense team that alleges misconduct on the part of the Colleton County clerk, Becky Hill. Now, this is where the case was tried, and Becky Hill was the clerk who was in charge of the courtroom.
Right. This is the person, I mean, you know, she could be seen probably numerous times over the course of this televised trial. She would be swearing in witnesses. You know, she would be, she was the one who was tasked with making sure that the jury was sequestered. You know, this is basically typical clerk stuff that clerks do, working for judges and working for the individual courthouse. So, Russ, why are we talking about her?
We're talking about her because apparently there have been some kind of very, very significant accusations by Alec. Oh, by the way, I'll interject this right here. So I was speaking to at a national DUI defense conference I was at. I was speaking to an attorney who actually personally knows the Alec Murdaugh.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you pronounce his name, it's not Alex, it's Alec, even though it's an X, and Murdaugh, even though it's A-U-G-H, is also with a hard C at the end. So it's Alec Murdaugh.
Murdaugh, okay.
Yeah, well, which, so he's, that's how powerful he was at the time. He could just get everyone to pronounce his name completely differently than it looks phonetically, and everyone just said, yes, sir, Mr. Murdaugh.
I'm not going to do that. You know,
you're going to keep saying
it off. I'm not going to give this guy his silent X treatment. I'm sorry. I'm going to read this how it is.
So let's get back to the allegations. So what is defense team is saying? So this Colleton County clerk, Becky Hill, she put out a book. That book hit stores August 1st. So just about 6 weeks ago, it hit bookstores.
So, was this a book about like knitting or how to efficiently run a county courthouse?
Yeah,
what kind of book was this, Russ?
It was actually pretty specific to the Murdaugh case. In fact, it was called Behind the Doors of Justice, The Murdaugh Murders.
Cashing in on the trial, huh? Okay. I mean, Russ, I'll tell you, this is nothing new. I mean, we've seen jurors and lawyers who have been part of high-profile cases write get book deals about this. I will say I've never heard a court clerk get this type of deal. I've never heard of this before.
I never have either, but this isn't the only deal she got. She also had multiple national media appearances. She went on the Today Show with jurors after the verdict. She has been getting at least somewhat famous, and presumably she's making some money off this.
Okay. All right. So fine. Maybe not the best look, but Russ, again, why are we talking about her?
So we're talking about her because according to the defense team had been apparently hearing things about misconduct.
Whisperings, murmurings, yes. Mumblings, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, but they tried following up on, and the misconduct is to do with very generally jury tampering.
Okay.
Right? And so they tried following up on this, but the jurors were not responding. Jurors, after a case, they do not have to speak to anyone. They don't have to speak to the defense.
Right. I mean, some of them can try and get a book deal and get their story made into a movie. You can just go and live in your log cabin and not talk to anybody if you want. It's really up to you.
Right. You can do whatever you want. And so jurors had, according to the defense team, been shunning their advances until this book came out. Hmm. And when the book came out, apparently some jurors did not like the light that they were put in by Miss Hill, by this clerk. And so they then agreed to go talk to the defense team. And according to what the defense team says, they found some damning evidence from these conversations, and it caused them to file this motion for a brand new trial. They said, throw out the conviction. We need to retry Alec because there was so much wrong with this.
Okay, this honestly right now, Russ, this sounds like just a bunch of defense tricks and tactics. Of course, they're going to attack the verdicts in any way they can. Of course, they're going to do whatever they can to cast doubt on the verdicts. I still don't get it. What's the big deal? What does Becky Hill have to do with any of this?
Becky Hill had exclusive contact with the jury. She is the person who's tasked with, most importantly, keeping them sequestered so that their deliberation and ultimately their decision on the case can be fair and impartial.
Okay. Sounds great. She must have done that, right?
Apparently, according to the motion, and we don't have all the details, right? We haven't seen testimony. We haven't seen what the defense has except what they're alleging they have, but what they're alleging is pretty bad.
I agree, Russ. I mean, this when I first heard this, I saw some bubblings and my reaction was what I just said. I was like, okay, big deal. Like, this is a high profile case. Of course, they're going to do anything they can to overturn the verdict. But then I spent a little bit more time in preparation for this podcast, Russ, because we've been talking about this for a little bit, and started looking into the allegations. And I could not agree more, Russ. They are serious. And I'll tell you right now, if any one of these things is true, we're gonna cover the allegations in just a minute here. But I mean, my stance is this is a serious enough breach where if any one of these things is true, Alec Murdoch.
There you go.
Hey, Alex Murdoch. I'm calling him Alex. He's going to get a new trial. So, and I'm not just spitting gobbledygook here. I mean, this is well-founded stuff. If there's any allegation that there was jury tampering, this verdict is in trouble and this might get retried.
Well, and it's because the jury are that's the foundation. That's the bedrock of our criminal justice system. You know, the right to be tried by a jury of your peers, inherent in that in the Constitution, is that they don't have any pre-inclination, or they're not being affected or pushed one way or the other during the trial and during deliberations.
Yeah. And again, this is something that Russ and I know just because we've practiced law for so many years, but the layperson may not understand this. There are really firm rules that are recited to the jury almost on a daily basis about what they can and can't do while they're hearing a criminal case. I mean, generally, almost every day, the judges at the end of the trial, pardon me, at the end of the day's proceeding, is going to say, okay, don't go home and talk to anybody about this case. Don't do any independent research.
Right.
Don't start looking up locations or information about this crime.
Don't go to locations.
Yeah, don't read any press about this case.
Right.
We want to keep you untainted. We want to make sure that your decision is going to be influenced by what is heard and presented in the courtroom and nothing else, and especially in this type of a case, right?
Exactly. And I'll tell you, that is so important. Sometimes jurors members are actually sequestered. Right. They are actually not allowed to go home sometimes. Now, I don't think this jury was sequestered.
No, they weren't.
But sometimes, and maybe they should have been, right? But sometimes they're basically said, hey, we're going to put you up in this hotel. You can talk to other jurors. That's the only group that you're going to interact with, especially about this case. And we're not letting you go home. We're not letting you talk to your spouses or your children until a verdict is reached.
Right.
Okay. And that's something that Becky Hill should have known.
Well, any clerk knows this.
Right.
I mean, again, Russ and I are trial lawyers. We know a lot of clerks. We always joke, clerks are the most important person in the courtroom, like more important than the judge, more important than the prosecutor. Because ultimately, if you have a clerk that just doesn't like you or thinks that you're a pain in the butt or whatever, they can make your life hell, Russ. Or you need that last minute continuance in front of the judge. Oh, I'm the one who gets to control whether the judge sees this at 4:45 on a Friday or not. You know, hopefully you like that clerk and they like you.
Right. Because vice versa works, right? Yeah. If you do need that 4:45 continuance, a clerk who has experience with you and who likes you will get that in front of the judge, and that helps you, that helps your client, that helps you be a better lawyer.
Right.
And so presumably, like, this is a small jurisdiction. We would assume that Becky Hill knows and has known Alec Murdoch for years. Right? Years.
Yeah. He prosecuted cases in the county where he was eventually tried. Russ, let's get into it. Let's talk about, so far we've teased this pretty well. I think we should actually get into some of the allegations that Alex Murdaugh, through his attorneys, are saying about Becky Hill. Why don't we alternate? Why don't you give one and then I'll give one? Because there's a lot here.
There's a good amount.
So why don't we just go down the list, Russ? You go first.
All right. I will start with... she allegedly asked jurors not to believe Murdoch's testimony or any evidence presented by his defense. And specifically, she told them, don't be misled by his evidence or fooled by his testimony, to essentially watch him closely and look at his actions.
Yep, that's some of it. She did things that are maybe indicative that she was maybe trying to pressure the verdict. She apparently told the jury these deliberations shouldn't take you too long. They apparently asked for a cigarette break. She denied that. That's her purview. No smokes for you until you bring a verdict. Russ, I remember this because if I remember correctly, we recorded a podcast after the closing arguments, but before the jury reached a verdict in this case. And I remember thinking, oh man, maybe we should wait for the verdict. They were out for like 2 hours.
Right.
Because by the time we were done recording, I think the verdict came in. So this was a very quick verdict.
Crazy quick on a 6 week. This trial was 6 weeks. That is an exceptionally fast verdict on such a long trial. All right. So the next one that they allege is this alleged Facebook post. So Colin, this is bizarre, but they basically are saying that Becky Hill, on the eve of trial, so day before trial, jury is still not fully selected. There is still one prospective juror who is apparently sympathetic towards the defense from the way the questions have been answered so far. So the defense wants this person on the jury. She went to the judge. Becky Hill went to the judge and said that this juror's ex-husband alleged that there was a Facebook post that was since deleted talking about how she was talking about the case during jury selection prior to the case being impaneled, right? Okay. So it's convoluted, right?
I think the key there is that you're saying she made this up.
That's the allegation.
She made up this Facebook post.
So part of what,
this backstory to get this juror kicked off.
Exactly. She said the allegation, and we don't know like how much legs any of this has, but the allegation is that South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, like the state law enforcement agency in South Carolina, interviewed the husband about this. The defense in their motion included an affidavit from the husband saying, I don't know what they're talking about. This is all made up. There was no Facebook post. I was never interviewed by South Carolina Law Enforcement Division. So they're alleging that she wholesale made up this story simply in order to get this one juror disqualified. And the judge did kick this person off.
Wow. A couple other allegations that the defense is leveling here. They say that Ms. Hill had frequent private conversations with the jury foreperson, including a private chat with her during the jury's field trip to Moselle, which was the scene of the crime. One more little one. Ms. Hill apparently told one of the jurors that the Murdaughs had gotten to her ex-husband, whatever the hell that means.
Right. I feel like this is like a mafia.
The Murdaugh family, according to what we've read, they kind of operated like a mafia family in terms of their power and control in this county. But, I mean, that's certainly something that a clerk should not be talking about with a potential juror.
And it's getting to the point where you can't even have private conversations with a jury foreperson in the middle of a jury deliberation.
And I'm sure, right, people are listening to what Russ just said and said, yeah, what's the big deal? We are going to be talking about why this is a big deal in a little bit, okay? But let's finish the allegations. Russ, what are the last couple?
Last couple are basically that she told the jurors, that they were going to be famous, and she handed out reporters' business cards to them after the verdict, that she pressured a group of jurors to do an interview with a network news show after the verdict.
That's so weird. Which honestly, I don't know. Is some of the weirdness here, Russ? We'll talk about this, but it's almost like it gives it teeth a little bit.
Yeah, so it's
what
so.
What the heck is a clerk? Why would she care if a juror goes to the media or not? And why is she handing out reporters' business cards? That's so bizarre.
Well, I'll tell you, we're going to talk about all that because I have some ideas about why she may have done those things. First, I want to say that the South Carolina Attorney General's Office has 10 days to respond to the defense motion, and if my calculations are correct,
and I believe that they are.
I'm saying I'm no math wizard. I'm a lawyer, not a doctor, but they are, I believe, due tomorrow.
Okay.
So we should be getting some. So maybe as everyone's listening to this podcast tomorrow, check your news feed and see how the state responded to this motion by the defense to throw out a guilty verdict and have a brand new trial.
Now, again, Russ, when I first heard these allegations, I'm sure like me and a lot of other folks kind of rolled their eyes and like, all right, what is Murdaugh? What are these legal shenanigans? What are we trying to do here? What has really perked up my ears a little bit, I guess.
Your ears do look perky today. I was going to mention it.
I mean, they're not normally above my head like that. I don't know why. I think it's just because I'm interested in this case. Hopefully I'll get less perked and they'll come back down to normal. Why are my ears perked up again? I'll tell you why. It's because these defense attorneys, they're not just throwing this out here. I mean, they are claiming that they've done an investigation where they interview jurors and apparently have affidavits from a juror or jurors who are backing up these claims, who are willing to go to court and say, yeah, this clerk did these things.
Yeah, they're not just throwing stuff at the wall. If they're to be believed, they're throwing really sticky stuff at the wall.
Right, right. Like it's covered like in tar, it's, paper, right. and
peanut
like,
butter on there.
Oh, man. Don't forget some glue. Yeah, that stuff is not falling. It's not. The prosecutors were hoping it would just slide right down. No, thing's sticking.
It's sticking.
So, Russ, I think this is a great time to take a little break and play our in mid podcast trivia game show. And then on the other half of that, other half of the podcast, we'll talk about why we think this is a big deal. We'll talk a little bit about misconduct cases that have happened with clerks and juries in the past. And
we'll talk about what her motivation might be for these things.
And we'll talk about what's next. And of course, we got a DCOTW at the end. So plenty of good stuff. Let's play some Is This Legal right now, though. We'll be back on the other side after this.
It is time for Is This Legal?
You know, Russ, that was pretty good, but like I've heard like way like better. Like Is This Legal?
Is that better?
Can we get you a One more throat. This is we're recording, by the way. All of this banter is on here.
Are you ready, ladies and gentlemen? Today's prime attraction is this legal.
That's what I'm talking about, Russ. Now I'm really ready.
Now everyone's ready. I don't know what that lackluster thing at the beginning was, but we have no patience for that here.
Yeah, here we go.
All right, so in today's episode of Is This Legal, our friend Jebediah is once again charged with bootlegging moonshine. Now, Officer Cornelius, he stopped Jebediah's moto car after it crossed state lines. And as expected, he found a bunch of illegal hooch inside. Mm-hmm. Now, Jebediah, he pleads not guilty and the case heads to a jury trial. The court begins jury selection and the attorneys start to question potential jurors. Mm-hmm. There is only one potential juror that is African American. Prosecutor Myrtle uses her first juror challenge to excuse the black prospective juror. Now, this means that this potential juror will not be on the final jury. Jebediah's lawyer stands up. He jumps up and says, "Objection! You cannot excuse this juror based on race." I should mention here that Jebediah is white. Now, the judge calls the lawyers up to the bench, which is a fancy term for saying the judge's desk. He looks at Myrtle and he says, "Your response, Madam Prosecutor." Her first response is, "Well, Your Honor, because the juror is African American, I believe he may be more suspicious of law enforcement and therefore less likely to convict Jebediah. Therefore, I don't want him on the jury."
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, is that legal?
Good question. Before we get to that question, real quick, you talked about the judge's desk. How about these judges who have those thing called sidebars? I mean, you've been in front of those guys before, right?
Counsel,
let's go ahead and come up and have a sidebar. And, you know, he's like, he rolls his chair over to, like, the sidebar, and we meet over on the sidebar. It's like, "Judge, I don't know why we can't meet right in front of you. I don't know why we have to, like, shift over here to this sidebar.
Let's have a front bar.
Are you going to offer me a drink while I'm at this bar? Or, you know, geez, are you going to keep it official? Water only. Maybe a club soda. Okay, fine."
I mean, I feel like there's a fair amount of lawyers who have some drinks before court.
Well, not during. And I guess what I'm saying is life would be better if they allowed that, right?
it would certainly make it more interesting.
Judge, make it a double. My client's driving me crazy over here. So anyway, enough nonsense. Back to the question. Sounds like we're dealing with when you can remove a juror or when you can't remove a juror, based on like a reason related to race. So Russ, the question again is, we've been talking, I think I forgot what the question was.
Question is, Myrtle says because the juror is African American, that's why she kicked him off. She doesn't think he'll be fair. And he'll be more likely to find the defendant not guilty.
Okay.
And therefore she wants him off the jury. Is that a legitimate reason to kick a juror off the jury?
What do you think out there, folks? Cause I'm going to answer the question right now.
Answer.
This is improper. Myrtle would not be able to excuse this juror under these circumstances because she admitted that she's excluding him for a race-based reason. Now, she said, well, you know, she was almost saying, there's a reason I'm feeling this way, but because she's making the decision based on that juror's race, that's the end of it.
That's
an improper exclusion. She can't do that.
And that comes from a case called Batson.
Yeah, Supreme Court case. You probably heard of it before.
Yeah, maybe you have, maybe you haven't, but that's what gives the right to not be have your jury decided based on race.
Yep.
All right, so second response. Let's rewind.
Follow up. Okay.
Yep, rewind. Here we go. If I could speak backwards really fast, I would have right then. So, number two, Myrtle, instead of saying that, she says, "Judge, it doesn't matter that he's African American. Jebediah is white." The fact that he's black and I excused him should only matter if the defendant himself were black.
Okay. Hmm.
What do you think? Is this legal?
Yeah. Is this legal? What do you think, folks? No, this is not legal either.
Nope.
Strike two for Myrtle. The reason is the race of the defendant, in this case, Jebediah, is completely immaterial. It doesn't matter if he's a black man or a white man. You're still talking about a peremptory challenge that is based on race.
Right.
She's making the decision based on race. You can't do that.
You just can't do that. It's it's black and white, if you will. And I know you will.
Except for when it's gray,
right.
Because there's plenty of those cases. But what's the third follow-up, Russ?
Third follow-up is, okay, Myrtle instead says, Your Honor, I am not basing my objection on his race. That has nothing to do with it. My objection is based on the fact that he told us he was a forgiving Christian, and because of his Christian faith, he may be less likely to convict because of those religious beliefs.
Okay. Myrtle, sounds like she's getting on the right track. She's at least saying, Judge, there's nothing to see here. This isn't a race thing at all, Your Honor.
It's a mere coincidence that I'm taking off the only black juror.
Yeah, like she said, look, my concern is that he's going to want to give this guy a second chance on his religion.
What do we think out there, people?
Is this legal? Is this legal? Is this legal?
Judge not, lest ye be judged.
Myrtle is 0-3.
Yep.
Russ.
Sorry.
We kind of tricked you on this last one. We're going to see if you guys fell for it. It is correct. I mean, basically, you can survive a Batson challenge. That's what we call this when the other side objects to you striking a juror. You can survive this as long as you put forth a race-neutral reason for wanting to strike the person, like Myrtle did. She said, hey, it has nothing to do with his race. It has to do with a response to the question. However, she's discriminating on the basis of religion now.
Myrtle is
also a protected class, Russ. You cannot discriminate against a person based on their race, religion, ethnicity, or their gender. Those are the protected classes. So that's why all of Myrtle's arguments fail. That juror is staying on under this example.
That juror is staying on. And if the judge screws up this ruling and says, okay, Myrtle, I'll buy that, I'll go ahead and let you kick this juror off, then on appeal, this whole conviction is getting thrown out.
Yeah.
And Jebediah gets a brand new trial.
Yeah. So, you know, Jebediah scot-free again, right? Team Jebediah, you should be happy about that one. So how'd you do at home? Kind of a tricky one, but hope you did okay. Russ, I think it's time to get back to our regularly scheduled programming. We'll be back. All right, welcome back to our programming. So coming back to Becky Hill here, this clerk. Look, I'm sure there are listeners out there, average Joe Blow, right? Joe's probably listening to this podcast, Russ, with his crew, and he's probably listening to us.
Joe and his crew.
he's probably saying, what's the big deal, guys? You're telling me this could get Murda a new trial and his conviction's going to be overturned? You got to be kidding me. The jury heard 6 weeks of testimony. They heard him lie his butt off on the stand. They heard him lie that he wasn't even there when we know that he was. How could just a few mutterings from a clerk expressing your opinions, how could that land us where we are, where this conviction is now in jeopardy? What would you tell Mr. Blow, Russ?
Shut up, Joe. No one asked you.
And your crew. Pipe down.
Your crew. No, I mean, this is like I said before, like this is fundamental to our justice system to have a jury that is free from coercion, right? Even if it's minor things, it's not minor enough when you have someone telling you, don't listen to him. He's lying. Watch him closely. This'll be quick. Like all of that can influence people, and you don't need much influence in a case to get from guilty to not guilty. Like a lot of cases are very close, but all of that is enough. And especially things like, you know, the Facebook fabrication, like getting a whole juror thrown off. Like if that's true, that's a huge deal. But any of these things independently, Colin, I mean, let's talk about some cases from our jurisdiction where things similar have happened.
Well, we rarely hear about clerk misconduct. You know, most of our body of law in this area is related to juror misconduct. And honestly, that makes sense. You bring in people from the community who don't know anything about laws or trials. They do their best, but people make mistakes. People are going to break rules. I mean, here are some examples of where we've seen situations like this. Ars, I think we covered a case like this in our podcast once. There was a murder case that happened in Colorado years and years ago. It was a death penalty case. And during the jury deliberations, one of the jurors brought in a Bible.
Right.
And they started reading from the passages related to, you know, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, and essentially use that biblical passage to sway the jury into saying, look, we have to put this man to death. We have to retaliate. And that's what they ended up doing. It came out that they relied on this Bible, that they were looking at a Bible, which is not a piece of evidence.
Right.
That's not something that would have been introduced at the trial.
Nope.
So that's an extrinsic piece of evidence that they're using and basing their decision off of.
They relied on.
That conviction, Russ, a death penalty, first-degree murder conviction, got overturned. Man gets a new trial because that Bible had an influence in the jury deliberations.
Right.
Okay. You see this more commonly with social media, with people Googling things when they get home. They're listening to a case, for example, and at dispute is maybe where the body was found. If the juror goes home and starts Googling that location,
right,
and looking at Google Earth images,
right,
all of that is going to taint their view of the case. That is evidence that it did not come into the courtroom. It's going to taint the jury. That case is going to get thrown out.
Right, it is. And it's because, you know, there are rules about evidence, and there's rules about what can come in and what can't, and things have to be authenticated, right? So if one of the parties wants to introduce a Google Earth's map, they go through court and they make sure the judge authorizes the admission of that piece of evidence. And if it didn't go through that process, then it's outside and you cannot consider it. And if you consider anything outside, like you said, the conviction gotta go. You get a new trial.
Again, we've been kind of talking about jury misconduct because, again, we don't see
there's
not a lot of clerical misconduct. I mean, Russ, we talked about this a couple days ago when we were looking at this for a potential podcast idea. I was like, have you ever in your career experienced anything like this? And, you know, I think we both came to the conclusion that no. Like nothing. I mean, most clerks that we deal with, they have very specific training in terms of how they're dealing with jurors, in terms of how they treat witnesses.
Well, and it's not just training, it's explicit in the courtroom. Like the judge tells the clerk exactly what their job is.
I actually looked that up, Russ. That's a great segue. This is going to be one of the reasons that I think Ms. Hill has some criminal exposure here, Russ, because in Colorado, the judge will actually swear in the bailiff or the court clerk,
right,
before they take control of the jury. And I mean, here's part of the advisement that the judge reads the bailiff in open court while the bailiff's hand is raised. The bailiff shall not speak to any juror about the case except to ask if a verdict has been reached, nor shall he or she allow others to speak to the jurors. When they have agreed upon a verdict, the bailiff shall return the jury to court. That's basically it. You have to keep them sequestered. You do not talk to them. Do not let other people talk to them. And so that's what makes these allegations so salacious and honestly so devastating to the state's case here. Because if one juror comes forward and says, yep, this person said this, it doesn't matter if it had an effect on the jury or not, Russ. Just the mere appearance of impropriety is going to be enough, I think, to get this case completely thrown out and we're going to have a new trial.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Even if the jury says, yes, she said this stuff, but we were decided. We're going to convict him anyway. We didn't believe him no matter what, whether she had said anything or not. We were going to convict him. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, because
it could have.
This idea is kind of ludicrous to me. That where a juror would say, "Well, I was going to vote. Not guilty. But once I heard that clerk say that the Murdaughs went after her husband, I just knew that I had to vote guilty." I don't think any juror is going to say that. I'm sure all of the jurors are going to say, "Yeah, we based our conviction based on the fact that we listened to the evidence and absolutely believed that this man was guilty."
Right. But I mean, that's not an out.
But that's not going to be an out here. That's not going to be an out. The prosecution's not going to be able to say, Your Honor, they have to actually prove that the jury was tainted right. by this. I don't think they do.
No, they don't. So before we go on to her potential criminal liability that you just alluded to, which I agree with, let's just talk, because her allegations had, a bunch of them were, you know, potentially nudging the jury in one way or another or pressuring a verdict. But we also have these weird allegations that, you know, she handed them cards of reporters. She said, right. you guys are going to be famous. Like, what does that have to, that's not saying convict him, right? But I have a theory about this.
Let's hear it.
So I think that that is relevant, okay? Because what the defense is saying is that she had an ulterior motive, that her motive, that Becky Hill's motive for doing all this was to get rich, was to get famous, was to cash in on this. If she is first pressuring a jury for a verdict, I think that does make it less likely that it's going to be a hung jury, that they're going to disagree if there's pressure to, like, let's just get something out there. But also, the more exposure that these jurors give to the media, to the case in general, well, that's more people who are interested, who are then going to buy her eventual book.
Okay. So basically, you think the reason she's handing out business cards is, look, I just want as many people talking about this case as possible so that I might be able to line my pockets even further.
I think that's at least the defense's position on this. Like, it goes to her credibility, and it makes it more likely that she did all of these things.
You know, here's the thing, though, that I'm struggling with, Russ. Like, let's say that theory is correct. Let's say that she was operating in order to, I guess, protect future financial endeavors related to what she's trying to do, to this cash-in that she's eventually going to do here. Does it matter what the verdict is? If it's guilty or not guilty? I mean, are you telling me she's going to sell fewer books if Murdaugh was acquitted? I don't know. I mean, there's an argument she might have actually sold more.
I agree that it doesn't matter if it's guilty or not guilty, but I think, like, all the evidence was weighted so far towards guilt
right.
in this case that's the way she put her thumb on that scale, because it would have been silly to put her thumb on the other scale.
I see what you're saying. I mean, again, just kind of standing back from this, just as a lawyer, this kind of thing, I mean, it's very foreign to me in the sense that I've never seen anything like this. I mean, I've had cases where there were some loose allegations that a juror heard or saw something that they weren't supposed to see. And honestly, sometimes that doesn't necessarily result in a mistrial.
Right.
I mean, honestly, sometimes lawyers aren't even allowed to talk to jurors.
Yeah.
If I go to the bathroom and a juror comes in the bathroom and says,
"How's it hanging, Colin?"
Talk about things they're not supposed to see. Yeah.
Awkward.
Or just, how are you?
Awkward.
Russ, in that situation, joking aside, I'm not even allowed to respond. I'm not allowed right. to say, "Hi, how are you?" Or "Lovely weather we're having." I remember I was in a trial where a juror knew that it was one of the attorney's birthdays that day. The juror goes into the bathroom and wishes the lawyer happy birthday. Guess what that lawyer had to do? He didn't respond. The lawyer went back into court and said, "Your Honor, I have to report an interaction I had with the jury."
Right.
A juror came up to me and said, "Happy birthday." I did not respond to him. "Your Honor, please advise the jury that I cannot talk to these parties. I can't talk to the jurors."
Right. And this happens, like, I have seen cops who were witnesses waiting out in the hallway. Yeah. I see them talking to a juror. Like, that's a huge deal,
right.
even though, like, in my cases, the interactions were harmless and it didn't result in anything. But I'm immediately finding out what I go to the judge and I say, "Judge, I just saw a cop who's going to testify talking to a juror," and the judge has to call in the cop. He has to call in the juror. What did you talk about?
Yeah.
Who initiated the conversation? Because there can't even be an appearance of impropriety.
Now, let's come back to this case, because this is the fascinating thing to me. Like, Russ, again, this is kind of foreign to me. It's foreign to you. We've never really had this. Most court clerks that we deal with are very professional. What was it that would make Ms. Hill be so reckless in her communications with the jury on such a high-profile case? Like, how could this happen on this case, of all cases, Russ? And honestly, you know, I've been thinking about that, and I can actually see this happening because it was such a small jurisdiction. Okay. Apparently Ms. Hill has been working as a court clerk in this jurisdiction for like 30 years. She's a court clerk, everybody's going to know her. She's going to know everybody. And I think when you're in that position of power, maybe she just got a little comfortable. Who's going to tell on me?
Did you know she's elected?
Really?
Yeah.
It's an elected position.
It's an elected position in Collette County.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So that, again, that actually furthers my suspicions even more. Right. She's top dog.
Right.
Like she doesn't have, she's not a deputy clerk. Right. She's reporting to someone else. This is someone who kind of runs the roost. And it goes back to what I was saying, that the most important person in the courtroom is the judge's clerk. I mean, the judge's clerk is kind of keeping the judge on time. They're making sure, hey, judge, don't forget to do this. Don't forget to do that.
Yeah.
This is the right-hand man of the judge. No one's going to want to come down on that person.
Right.
I can actually see this happening in a small town jurisdiction where this lady's been a part of the scene for years and years. I think she, just got a little careless, but it kind of lends credibility to this. That's what I'm thinking.
It does.
I don't know what this woman did or didn't do. Right. This is alleged, by the way.
Right.
But I can see it.
Yeah. It'll be very interesting to see, like, if they do have affidavits from jurors confirming that some of these conversations took place. And again, I think Colin and I are both of the opinion that only one of these proven to be truthful is going to result in a new trial for Murdoch.
Russ, it's prediction time, I've decided.
Well, wait, let's talk about her criminal liability.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's do that then. Let's do prediction time. Sorry. Yeah,
I like that.
Prediction time in a minute.
Right.
Okay, criminal liability here. So for starters, off the top of my head, direct contempt of court. Okay. Yeah. She swore an oath to the judge in open court that she would faithfully charge the jury and make sure that she kept them free from any external influences. And obviously, she herself might have done these things. I think she's exposed to direct contempt of court, which is a criminal case.
And by the way, for any online sleuths out there who can want to comb through the video of this, if you can find that clip, that would be very interesting to see if there is a clip of that.
What Russ is talking about is this would be after closing arguments, but before jury deliberations, we would expect there to have been, I guess, a time in court where the judge swears in the clerk and says, okay, I'm swearing you in to take charge of the bailiff. Do you swear that you will faithfully and honorably discharge your duties as the court clerk?
Right.
And she would say, yes, I do. So if she violates that, that's direct criminal contempt. Russ, what do you think? What other charges are out there?
I mean, I totally agree with that one. I mean, like some sort of attempt to influence.
Yeah, we have attempt to influence a public servant in Colorado, which is basically if there's a public servant, paid or unpaid, if you're attempting to bribe that person or influence their decision, that's a felony.
Right.
That could be something here. I mean, if she clearly was attempting to influence the jury's verdict with these statements.
And in their role as public servants, I think you could make that connection.
There's obstruction of justice, obstruction of government operations. Those are kind of more nebulous. Those are misdemeanors. I don't know. But I definitely think she's exposed to criminal liability here.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you're the prosecutor, if you're that guy, Creighton, whatever his name is, who prosecuted this case for 2 months and you find out that these kind of shenanigans were going on, but behind the scenes, wouldn't you want to prosecute it?
Yeah, I mean,
you would.
I'd be so angry.
I would be so furious.
His head is probably.
I would be furious if I was a juror. I would be furious anyone involved in this case.
Right.
So, prediction time. So, Russ, let's make a few predictions about the case. We did predict that Murdaugh would be convicted. We were right about that.
We nailed that. That was kind of a layup, though. I mean, especially when we had the inside man just nudging him.
This was all Russ allegedly. And Colin, by the way. Yeah, this was our way if we could promote our podcast. We got in touch with Witness Hill. No, we didn't do any of that stuff. Just kidding. But predictions. Will Alex Murdaugh be retried due to these errors that Ms. Hill is accused of committing here?
So assuming that any one of these many allegations has any sort of confirmation, absolutely.
Yeah.
No question about it. And you don't need a lot.
Yeah, I'm making that prediction right now. I think he's going to get a new trial out of this.
Yep.
This just stinks. I think the book deal really, really taints her credibility big time. She's in trouble. All right, second question. And I know we might be getting out over our skis here a little bit, but because we don't know how all this is going to hash out in this hearing. But let's try it anyway. Do we predict any criminal charges for Becky Hill?
So again, we're way out there because we haven't seen any evidence yet. I am, however, going to say no.
No criminal charges.
I'm going to say no criminal charges. And part of that is, even if some of this is true, small jurisdiction, she's been there forever. She can say that it was, you know, I think there's a good argument to say she wasn't going to affect the outcome. I mean, that doesn't affect whether he gets a new trial, but for her, like, I think she can say, I didn't have an intent to influence anyone.
I'm going to zag where you're zigging. Yeah. I think she is going to get criminally charged with something. I don't know. I want to give this woman the benefit of the doubt. She's innocent until proven guilty. We don't know all the facts. We only know what we're kind of reading in this defense motion. All I can say, though, is this defense motion doesn't seem to be coming out of left field. That's completely unsupported. There seems to be some credible evidence that something was going on here. And if it was, I think because this trial was so big, I think because of the huge expense of resources and time that went into this trial, I would expect there to be criminal accountability for her.
Yeah. For me, Colleton County, it's not exactly known for,
she just kind of gets shunned and she loses her job and goes away kind of thing.
I think it kind of gets swept under the rug.
Maybe that's going to be in her book.
Well, I'll tell you one thing on the book real quick, just to clarify this. She didn't get a book deal. She self-published this. So this is helping her sell.
Didn't I read something, though, that she's partnering with either a ghostwriter to put out this book and she's doing a documentary?
She's definitely partnered with someone.
I mean, she's clearly trying to make some money off of this.
Clearly trying to make money, but it was not. My only point is, just to clarify, it's not like she was going to a big publishing company and getting a book deal.
Okay.
She didn't get that.
All right. All right. Well, we shall see, but this is pretty stinky for this case. We're going to have to find out how it all shakes out, and boy, we will be paying attention. This case just has everything, doesn't it? I mean,
well, everything except a dumb criminal.
I think I know where you're going with this, Russ. I think it's time for
D-C-O-T-W, the dumb criminal of the week.
The dumb criminal of the week. The dumb criminal of the week. We need to sound as menacing as possible for this one, Russ.
Like Batman.
all right. Of course, we're going back to Florida. I don't make this up, guys. I mean, I don't know why that it seems like 85% of the dumb criminals that I look for on the internet, they all seem to spawn from Florida.
It's not like we're searching Florida dumb criminals.
Maybe we should just start doing that to save time. But okay, this is our dumb criminal of the week. Here you go. A businessman named Neil Colton was doing some work in his motel room, which was at a Days Inn located in Flagler County, Florida. It was midday, and he looked out of his motel room and he saw a large Peterbilt semi-truck arrive in the lot. But this wasn't just any truck, Russ. The truck's color was hot pink, like hot pants pink, baby. So this guy, Mr. Colton, he notices this truck pull up, and then he notices our two DCOTWs get out of the truck, one from the passenger side, one from the driver's side, with about 20 cans of red spray paint. And right there in the motel parking lot, Russ, they begin painting this hot pink semi fire engine red with these red cans of spray paint. Suspicious. Mr. Colton observes them for a while and he calls the police. He's like, I don't know what's going on here, but this is what's happening. So the cops show up and they find a half red, half pink semi truck, and the two painters immediately see the police and take off into the woods, leaving the truck and the spray cans behind. The cops run the plate to the truck, which had been reported stolen just 2 hours earlier. Our two dumb criminals are found in the woods just nearby and were charged with aggravated motor vehicle theft and resisting arrest. We got a quote here, Russ. This is from the police captain, Rick Staley, out of the Flagler County Sheriff's Office. He says, thanks to another concerned citizen calling after see something, say something, our deputies were able to catch the two thieves and return and recover the stolen semi and return it to its rightful owner. These people also got selected as Dumb Criminals of the Week Award for thinking they could spray paint a semi in a hotel parking lot and not be noticed. Russ, that's our DCOTW. Now, a couple things first. I think we have copyright infringement from the Flagler County Sheriff, Rick Staley. DCOTW is our term.
Ooh, yeah.
You can't steal Dumb Criminal of the Week. You don't get to give him the Dumb Criminal of the Week Award. That's our award, Sheriff Staley. Thank you very much.
I tell you, Sheriff Staley, you're just lucky we're in alignment and we both chose him as the DCOTW. Otherwise, you'd be in some trouble. You'd be getting probably at least a strongly worded cease and desist letter.
Handing out our award, man. It's our job to say who's a dumb criminal around here, not yours. Russ, this case is pending, so let's make up names for these guys to protect the innocent. Oh, I need two Florida names for these guys. You give me one.
I like the name Josiah.
Josiah, last name?
Niebler.
Perfect. Josiah Niebler and Monty Screampants. All right. So what do we give?
One of my favorite last names, Scream Pens.
I mean, as far as their paint job, I guess you could say their paint job on the truck was semi-decent.
You had that in your pocket, clearly.
I'm not saying I did. I'm not saying I did. Russ, that's what we got for our DCOTW today. We have two guys on the slate. This is where we need to award that we award, not you, Sheriff Staley. This is where we award our knuckleheads. One out of five, one being not so stupid, five being the most stupid thing you've ever seen. Russ, what do we think here?
I mean, there's so many things that were stupid about this. First, just could you choose a more just obvious target of your theft?
The only more obvious vehicle is like the Batmobile. You're talking about a hot pink semi truck. Right. No one's going to miss that, Russ.
Right. And no one's going to notice it driving anywhere. And all right, to think that you can get it spray painted with like a can
or a couple cans of spray paint. Yeah. You know, the funny thing, there's pictures of this truck. They actually put paint tape on the lights to make sure they didn't paint the lights. Russ, they were careful.
So they were doing a professional job. Did they have a ladder? Because semis are huge.
No, they didn't.
Like, I mean, how are you going to not have, I mean, even if this guy hadn't called, they would have then been driving around a mostly red truck with pink peeking through at various spots where I still don't think that they would have gotten away.
Well, you know, and the other thing we look at too, right? I mean, how about the location they chose to paint the truck? Just, I mean, let's make sure
we put it
right in front of a parking lot with as many people looking out their windows as possible, right? Yeah. Okay, I'm giving up four. I will give them a four only from the standpoint that they at least got away for a couple hours before getting caught. But that's being generous, I feel like. I probably should have given them a five.
Yeah, I'm going to do 4.5.
Okay.
4.5. And just, I'm withholding the half because I think there's probably some dumber criminals out there that deserve the five.
Yeah. But yeah, man, next time maybe just steal a regular semi, maybe not something so hot pink.
Just think first, Mr. Scream Pants. Just think.
I love making up the names is like my favorite part. Listeners, do you have made up names for us that you'd like us to use for future episodes? Yeah. Just submit them. I think we'll end there though. So we've rated him. I went up to 4.5, by the way. So we'll say 9 for our friends here.
Good.
That's the end of this episode. Thank you as always for listening. Russ, where can people find us?
You could submit your name entries at Is This Legal Pod on Twitter or X. You can find us on Facebook at Hebbets McCallan. or email us at denvercrimelaw@gmail.com.
Would you like to be a guest? Would you like to play Is This Legal with us? We don't always have guests. Lately we haven't, but that's not to say that we're opposed. Russ, are you opposed to guests?
I'm not opposed to guests. I have nothing against guests.
I've got nothing against guests. No. No, bring them on.
I like them, actually.
So yeah, if you want to, you could be a random person. We may not know who you are. You want to be on our show and play some Is This Legal, see how smart you are? Hit us up on email. But thanks, as always, for listening, and we're going to let Dr. Mike G. take you out with our closing music. Have a good one.
Johnny Law looked at me, said, Jebediah, can't you see them things you're doing just ain't right. Going round this town, stirring up a fright. You can run, won't get far. Driving in your motor car. Look Cornelius right in the eye. Said you ain't got proof, I ain't the guy. Said I may not wear no crown upon my head. I may not be regal. Tell me one thing.